On this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we get caught up on the latest news and information about the ASC industry, talk about workplace violence, and prepare for the annual announcement of the ASC rates from CMS by discussing how Medicare pays for ASC services.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource their regulatory oversight to Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality improvement, risk management, emergency and infection control programs, run their meetings, develop education programs, and always be prepared for surveys.
Welcome to episode 60 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for July 17th, 2019, recording from our studio in Rochester, New York. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS, and I'm here with John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and one of the leading experts in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry and the author and co-author of over 10 books about the ASC industry, including the Survey Guide for ASCs. John speaks frequently at both national and state ASC meetings on a wide variety of topics.
So it's hard for me to take you seriously with that unicorn headphone on your head.
We're recording. We're not, you know, filming this. People don't need to know.
and that's the second take we had to do because we're burning up inside of our studio here. So our air conditioning is not working on the side of the house where the studio is. And we have to keep the door closed. Otherwise, the dogs
trot in and out and make a lot
constantly.
Of noise.
Constantly. So
it's really warm.
I opened the window just to crack there. We don't usually do that Well, I guess it doesn't matter because the air conditioning is not working. So we might have to take a couple breaks here. Well, we've been very, very busy again. We have 5 centers under construction at this point. I keep telling people we don't do startups, and yet we have 5 centers that are under construction, which is keeping us very busy. And also, we're recovering from 4 surveys. So this happens every once in a while, just in our cycle, that we have a whole bunch of surveys at one time. So we spent a lot of time preparing a bunch of centers for the surveys. They all had them within the last probably about 90 days. And now we're just starting the next cycle. So we're doing applications for probably, what is it, another 3 centers that are getting ready for the next cycle.
Yeah. And pretty intensive.
Yeah. And we've been having, I think this is a good thing to talk about, life safety surveys have become a major issue. A number of our centers, especially the 4 that recently had surveys, are older facilities. And Medicare and CMS and the deemed status accreditation organizations are really not looking at grandfathering anymore. So in particular, virtually every one of the centers that has an old generator system is having to make some major changes to that system. In the past, it used to be that if your organization was of a certain age, you didn't have to have a type 1 system, and now they're enforcing a type 1 system on any organization that does general anesthesia. So,
And that can be quite a big thing.
Absolutely. One of our centers actually has a $1 million price tag associated with it. The building's so old.
Yeah, an easy fix.
So that's been keeping us quite busy as we do this. And just FYI, what we've had to do with one of our centers is they're not able to fix the problem in the time frame that they have. So we've had to actually do a time-limited waiver. Which I've only done one other in my life. This is the second one I've done. So we just finished that a couple weeks ago, or about a week ago, and got that off to CMS. So they're going to hopefully buy themselves another year in order to fix the problem and generate the funds to be able to fix that problem.
Absolutely. So, I mean, some of these things just can't be fixed in a very quick manner.
So. In 45 days, right?
Yeah.
Like you have to. So just a warning out there. I mean, I hear this over and over again, especially when we take on a new client. They say, well, you know, we've had clean surveys throughout, you know, on the life safety side. Don't worry about those life safety things. And that's just not the case anymore. So these surveyors come in and they find things that have been there for years. Just because, and I also find this too, Sue, is that with centers that have, you know, that have started up with only a state survey, they're often quite surprised when the CMS or when a deemed status surveyor comes in and finds a lot of issues. Mm-hmm. Just because you pass the state survey doesn't mean that you're going to have an easy walk through the CMS survey. So.
Or an earlier CMS survey, because we hear that a lot. You know, well, I can argue this because they've come through before and not said anything about it, but you don't have a leg to stand on with that.
That's right. Because it was not cited before. Yeah, absolutely. I did want to, again, remind our listeners that we do have a new program available, which is called the Membership in the Podcast. The cost of doing this podcast on a regular basis has become pretty expensive, and it is very expensive, and we're trying to find some ways to defray the cost of producing the podcast. You know, we have to pay for the travel costs for going to conferences, all the equipment costs, obviously the new studio that we are constructing downstairs, which hopefully be a lot cooler, and there are ongoing costs, and you know, we've upgraded all of our equipment within the last 6 months here. So we'd love to have you as a member of the podcast. What we're asking, if you go to the www.ascpodcast.com and follow the link in the upper right-hand corner, you'll get more information about how you become a member of the podcast. And for $10 a month, you can become a member and receive the following additional benefits. You can access additional content in a private section of our website, which we're building, including additional downloads. You can interact with the podcast hosts and other members about ASC issues and discuss recent episode content. And after every 3 months of membership, if you're a CAST certified administrator, you can also get one AEU credit for that quarter. So please go to ASCpodcast.com and please help support us by becoming a member of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. The second thing I want to talk about is that we have a new book out there. Alex Borneman and I have written the Survey Checklist for ASCs, a tool for the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers. We've got to make these titles shorter. 2019 edition. It is available now both on our book website, which is www.reg-books.com, or you can also get it now. It is listed on Amazon. So feel free to pick up that book, which gives you a nice way to kind of determine your preparedness for a CMS survey. And it's definitely a complement to the survey guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, the most recent edition being the 2017 edition. Both of those books will help you to prepare for CMS surveys, and as we always say, always be prepared. And then don't forget about the other book, the Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. All of these books are available on Amazon or at our website at www.reg-books.com. So, Sue, what's going on in the ASC industry?
In AORN's June 24th issue, they mentioned that this year, at least 16 states have introduced more than 30 bills to address workplace violence in healthcare, which I think is a topic that's very close to our heart, because whether when I was working in the hospital, there were some, you know, pretty scary things that happened. Right. Jenna's mentioned some, you know, active shooter.
Yeah, she worked out in Reno, Nevada, where they had shooters actually come into the surgery center, and a lot of discussions both at the national and state association meetings have addressed this. And there's different types of workplace violence, you know, not only among workers, but also with people coming in from outside.
Yeah, and recently in a couple of our centers, there have been incidents where just patients just got very unruly and out of control, and it can be scary. So it's good to hear that people are paying attention to that and advocating for all of us. According to OSHA, 21% of registered nurses and nursing students reported being physically assaulted, and over 50% reported being verbally abused in a 12-month period. 12% of emergency department nurses experienced physical violence, and 59% experienced verbal abuse during a 7-day period. I think probably the emergency department especially, it can be a dangerous place. 13% of employees in Veterans Health Administration hospitals reported being assaulted in a year, and workplace violence resulting in missed work days for the injured worker to recover are 4 times more common in healthcare sector than in private industry. So it's good for everybody if we can find some ways to deal with this. And I found a good OSHA publication on workplace violence. If you just Google workplace violence and healthcare, understanding the challenge, there's a good sort of a PDF that just kind of gives you some pointers.
Okay, and we'll try to put that on the website too. I think a big takeaway from this too is just making sure that your workplace violence policies are up to date and that you have ongoing training for your employees. Yeah. Do drills. Alex has been doing a lot of active shooter drills, actually in our centers. But you don't even have to go that far. I mean, just dealing with, you know, irate patients, which happens, of course.
Yeah, you can get training on how to minimize the escalation, you know, how not to be confrontational. And that's always really useful.
So let's take it seriously. I do think this is an issue. Every time we do a conference session on workplace violence, it is very well attended. So clearly this is a subject that people are very interested in talking about.
And data collection for the second quarter is now open for the 2019 Clinical and Operational Benchmarking Survey.
So don't forget to get that done before the end of July. So that's July 31st when the last data can get in for that. And clinical and operational benchmarking surveys are a very valuable tool for ambulatory surgery centers. It gives you numbers to compare yourself against what's going on nationally. And it is obviously a benchmarking is a requirement for accreditation and for CMS. So
yeah, it's a great way to compare and get some information in your QI minutes and into your QI meetings.
And we are waiting for the July CMS rates anxiously. They did not come out on July 1st as they have in past years. But for those of you who don't know or have forgotten or don't care, the CMS comes out every year in July, sometime during the month with the proposed rate setting for the following year. So we're waiting for the 2020 proposal for the ASC rates. And also when they announce these rates, we get to an idea of what's going on with the Medicare Quality Reporting Program also. So, and that's, Sue, I decided that that would be our topic for today. We're going to talk about Medicare rate setting, just so, you know, people have been asking more for more information about financial issues in ambulatory surgery centers. And even if you're a nurse, you really do need to understand how Medicare reimburses surgery centers because that has a huge impact on the way we operate. Mm-hmm. So we'll do that in our second segment today. But talking also about finance, a lot going on in the surprise bill at a national level. Now, we live in the state of New York, and New York does already have a surprise bill provisions that require surgery centers to provide information to patients to avoid this. So the issue with surprise bill is when a patient comes into a surgery center, they're not always aware that that organization or some of the providers in that organization are out of network. And this is often quite a surprise and can be quite a bit of a financial burden, especially if the patient is required to make some substantial payments because they thought that the procedure was covered by their insurance company and it wasn't. In response to patient complaints about surprise bills that they've received in ambulatory surgery centers and in other healthcare providers, the Congress and the President has picked up on the issue over the last year, and there's been a number of proposals for some changes. Now, there are two legislative proposals that are most prominent right now after quite a number of hearings on the topic, and one in the House and one in the Senate. And they do have three common elements, which I just wanted to go through, and this is from the ASC Association's summary of this. First, each of these bills would require the health plan to treat out-network services as if it were an in-network for purposes of enrollee cost-sharing deductibles and out-of-patient limits. So that would help the patient to know that even if they have insurance and they are receiving services in an out-of-network provider, at least they're not going to have to pay more than they would have if that were an in-network provider. And then second, the proposals would prohibit out-of-network providers and facilities from balance billing patients. So this would have a significant financial impact on centers that that do that balance billing. And third, each would resolve reimbursement disputes between payers and providers by requiring the insurer to pay the median in-network negotiated rate for the service in the geographic area where the service is were rendered. So again, this is another perhaps nail in the coffin of out-of-network billing, because if this does come into effect, it really is going to have quite a bit of an impact on surgery centers that are doing out-of-network. The Secretary of Health and Human Services would be directed to determine through rulemaking the specifics of the median and in-network rates. So while the House is a bit limited, the Senate proposal also includes additional provisions ranging from efforts aimed at lowering the price of prescription drugs to increasing competition among providers and price transparency. So a lot of this information I just gave you is from the ASC Association. The ASC Association has been developing information to provide to Congress and the administration on what the industry's thoughts are on this and to make sure that they have enough information to make intelligent decisions here. So we have to keep a very close eye on what's going on here, because this could be something that's pretty significant to the ASC industry. So stay tuned for more information about that.
Okay.
Okay, let's take a short break and we'll come back and we'll talk about how ASCs are paid by Medicare.
Thank you. Okay, so my question would be, why as nurses or administrators do we need to care about all this payment information? And I guess even if you don't get a lot of Medicare patients, why is it still important to know that?
That's a good question and a typical nursing question. You know, why do I need to learn this?
Save your life, but I don't care about how we get paid. Well, I mean, I guess I do because I want my paycheck.
That's right. That's the number one reason right there as to why it's important is that this is how we get paid. This is how surgery centers survive. But it is a very fair question is that, you know, many surgery centers out there might not take Medicare. Well, they have to take Medicare in order to participate in the Medicare.
But do they? Get a lot of them, or get a lot of patients.
And let's make that clear, is that in order to become an ambulatory surgery center, of course, you have to take Medicare. The ambulatory surgery center regulations, you know, require you to take Medicare, and that's why we have Medicare regulations. Mm-hmm. But Medicare is a major payer in the country, and, you know, they pay for a lot of the procedures that are done in an ambulatory surgery center, particularly, you know, GI and pain management, and of course, eye procedures. But more importantly, or just as important, I guess, is many other insurance companies follow the Medicare rate system. So even if you don't take Medicare, you're going to have to understand how the Medicare system works because your insurance company is probably following the standards of, you know, that were set by Medicare. And then there's a lot of talk right now about Medicare for all. In other words, if we were to change over to a system that Medicare is the only payer in the country, or they use the Medicare rates, then obviously we're all going to have to know how the Medicare reimbursement works. So that's probably one of the important things to talk about. So, you know, here's some very basic stuff. So patients, when they come to a surgery center, are going to receive up to four different bills. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously we're going to bill for the services that occur that we provided, which is for the use of the surgery center, the cost of the nurses that are there, the cost of pre-op and post-op care, the anesthesia drugs that are used, all the other drugs and any other supplies. So there's quite a bit of costs that go into providing those services. And that's what the surgery center bills for. But the patient's also going to get a bill from the physician for his services. They're going to get a bill from the anesthesia provider, if there is one, for the services that were provided by anesthesia. And if pathology was taken, then they're going to get a bill from the pathology. So up to, you know, four different bills being generated. Now, they might not see those bills, you know, depending upon how their insurance company works. They'll probably just get a summary at the end that says, oh, we paid these on your behalf. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are four distinct billings occurring there often in the background. And another thing, which sometimes nurses are surprised about, because in some centers, you know, you have to fill out the sheet that talks about, you know, all the things that you provided, the implants that you put in, you know, sometimes even like how many Band-Aids you had to use during the procedure. That's kind of ridiculous now, but there are centers that have been doing it for so long that they don't realize you don't need to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. So Medicare only pays one price, basically only pays one price for the procedure that's performed in a surgery center with very few exceptions. And as I mentioned, that's for the use of the facility, the nurses, you know, all the employees that are there. The anesthetics, the drugs, and any other medical supplies that are involved in that procedure. So it's an all-inclusive rate. Now, there are a couple exceptions we'll talk about in a little bit that, you know, the Medicare does pay an additional fee for. So don't worry. We're not charging the patient for every Band-Aid that you use out there. I've been asked that question sometimes, you know, by staff members that don't understand how Medicare does reimburse. So I was actually at lunch today, Sue, with a friend of mine out in Buffalo. He and I have worked together for 30 years, and Tony Lyons is his name. I'll mention that he's a very, very dear friend of mine. And he's actually the guy that got me into the ASC industry. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but he was the CFO of a hospital in the Buffalo area in 1989 when that hospital decided that they were going to buy a surgery center that was under construction. Mm. And I helped him. At that point, I was working for KPMG as an accountant, very young at that point, by the way. I had no gray hair. I had really no children, which has caused the gray hair that I have today. And we helped him negotiate the purchase of that center. And at that time, ambulatory surgery, so this is 1989. And surgery centers have really only been around for about 20 years, not even 20 years. And Medicare had actually just started reimbursing within the decade before. And initially, there were only four different rates. Medicare was, at that time, still paying for the procedures at a fixed rate. And at that point, there were only four rates, which were increased to eight right around 1990. Because that rate system wasn't very complex, you couldn't do complex procedures because there were only, you know, four or eight different rates that were being set. And the other problem with the system in the late 80s and early 90s is that the system was really based on Medicare patients. So there wasn't a lot of work done on the reimbursement system for procedures that weren't being performed on Medicare patients. Mm-hmm. So, for example, OBGYN orthopedic cases, they were kind of shortchanged because the reimbursement rates for those procedures didn't have a lot of history and the Medicare reimbursement wasn't very good for it. So along comes 2008, Medicare began paying for facility services provided in ambulatory surgery centers such as nursing, recovery care, anesthetics, drugs, and other supplies, using a new payment system that was primarily linked to the hospital outpatient prospective payment system, mm-hmm. better known as OPPS. I'm actually reading from some MedPAC information that is used by Congress to provide legislators with information about the Medicare system. So Medicare is a reimbursement system provided by the government that pays for patients over 65 years old or people that have been disabled or their children. And under this system, beneficiaries are actually responsible for paying the Part B deductible and the 20% of the ASC payment rate unless they have a program that covers that gap. Okay. So the unit payment in the ASC payment system is the individual surgical procedure. So what the reimbursement system does post-2008 is that there is a list by CPT-4 code of all of the procedures that are generally done in an ambulatory surgery center. So there are 3,000 different rates based upon what we call the APC system or an APC grouping. So I'm not going to get into the details of how that works. But basically what's happening here under the system is that CMS uses this fancy computer system that takes information from the hospital reimbursement and cost reports that are prepared on an annual basis for hospitals and groups these procedures into different groupings depending upon the complexity of the procedures. And that grouping gets changed, or the intensity of that grouping gets changed every year as they readjust the reimbursement rates. So generally, there aren't significant changes or huge changes from one year to the next. But as we talked about last year in July and right through November, when there were significant changes to the vascular reimbursement, there are years where something drastic does happen. So that's why we're always anxious to get the new Medicare reimbursement rates that come out or the proposal that comes out in July. Mm-hmm. In addition, ASCs can receive separate payments for implantable devices that are eligible for pass-through payments under OPPS. Pass-through payments are for specific new technology items that are used in the delivery of services, and the purpose of those payments is to help ensure beneficiaries access to technologies that are too new to be well represented in the data that CMS uses to set these rates. And that, again, that data comes from hospital cost reports. So all of this rate-setting information suit doesn't come from any information that ASCs provide. And that has been an issue, as we talked about in mm-hmm. a recent episode with MedPAC, that they do want, MedPAC would like to have ASCs submit cost reports, and, mm-hmm. and we of course, would not like to do that. Not because we don't want them to have that information. It's just that those cost reports are very onerous. They're very time consuming to prepare.
Yeah. It could be helpful information for them to have. It could be helpful in the end, but it's a very difficult process.
Right. And New York State does have a cost report system. That's mm-hmm. why we know so much about it. And
we know how difficult it is.
That's right. Exactly. And one thing to note is when the 2008 system came out, when they expanded the program and had many more reimbursement rates, CMS substantially expanded the list of services that qualify for Medicare facility payment in ASCs. So it really, in 2008, the sky became the limit for the types of procedures that could be performed in an ASC. And significant growth occurred after 2008 as a result of that. And Medicare at that time began paying for all procedures that don't pose a significant safety risk when performed in an ASC and do not require an overnight stay. Up until that time, that the requirements were much more restrictive. So other things that CMS pays separately for are corneal tissue acquisition, brachytherapy services, certain radiology services, and certain drugs. So we've talked about non-opioid drugs as one of those drugs that are being reimbursed right now. So we have to constantly keep an eye on that. And if you haven't looked at the payment system recently to make sure that any drugs that you're using are not being, make sure that you're being reimbursed for those properly. Mm-hmm. So CMS proposes rate changes every July. That's what we're waiting for. And it includes a list of the new procedures that are proposed to be reimbursed. We're always keeping a very close eye on total joints because we do expect some changes to occur in that type of reimbursement shortly. And it includes an adjustment factor. Every year there's an inflationary adjustment. It usually is quite small and quite frankly, frankly, the inflation has been quite a bit under control lately, so there hasn't been significant changes. Last year, there was about a 2% adjustment factor. And then in addition to that, as I mentioned before, these rates are reweighted every year. So not only are rates going to change because of the cost of living adjustment, but they are going to be reweighted because of that hospital cost information that changes the intensity of the procedures that are being performed in the surgery center. Fortunately, those changes are not usually significant, but they do occur. And as we also know, these are when the annual July proposed rates come out, that's also when they announce changes to the quality reporting program. And I think that probably is the thing that impacts us the most from the regulatory standpoint. That's when major changes occur. And as we know, last year, they pretty much gutted the Medicare reporting program and left very few things left. So we're, again, anxiously waiting for that. So as soon as the new Medicare proposed rates come out, we will have another podcast to talk about that and anything that we can glean from the information. Do you hear the dogs walking around in
walking and sniffing under the doors?
I don't know if that's coming through on the microphones, but it's getting quite annoying here.
I know. It's my dog.
Yeah. So let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about what's coming up in the ASC industry when it comes to conferences.
John, ambulatory healthcare strategies is really growing fast. We've been adding employees steadily over the past 12 months. Can you tell the listeners what's been happening?
So clearly, this podcast has been very popular, thanks, of course, to you and me, because of our wonderful work here and our infectious, I don't know if I should be using infectious personalities in a podcast here about infection control and various items, but definitely we're enjoying doing this, and certainly the word is getting out about the great things that we're doing at AHS. So recently, we added infection prevention consulting to our services and mentoring of infection control preventionists in your organizations, and that's being headed up by Lori Rodericks, who is our newly certified CAIP individual. So she has the Certified Ambulatory Infection Preventionist certification now, and she's always been doing infection control for us, but now she's got this new title. So she can do ongoing infection control consulting, particularly if you don't have a qualified IC person on staff. She can help you in following up on infection control issues. She can do mentoring of infection control staff. And she can do infection control and sterile processing competencies. And we've also enhanced our life safety services by adding Jim Masters to our staff. He is a life safety surveyor, and so he joins Alex Borneman, who is our director of operations, to be able to do various life safety surveys and consulting on life safety issues, as well as probably the most important thing is follow up on life safety citations. That's a very difficult area for many organizations to be able to deal with. You know, what happens when you get a life safety citation? How do you deal with that? So we now have that ability. And of course, our unique retainer-based regulatory services, where we help keep you on top of all the ASC regulatory requirements and always make sure that you are survey ready.
So let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry.
So every episode, we inform you about upcoming events that we've been informed about. We would obviously like to include your event. So if you wanted to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info@ascpodcast.com.
Also want to remind you that the ASC Podcast with John Gailey is available to support your ASC association. John is available to speak, and the podcast can record a podcast from your meeting.
And by the way, Sue, the New York State Association podcast is setting records. We've had the highest number of downloads for that particular episode. So that was kind of interesting. I just looked at that statistic. So thank you for all of our New York State listeners. You definitely are keeping a very close eye on our podcast.
Yeah, that was a good one. The Georgia State ASC Association and the South Carolina State Association joint semi-annual meeting is August 15th through the 16th at the DeSoto in Savannah, Georgia.
And the California Ambulatory Surgery Association annual conference is in Monterey Bay on September 4th through the 6th, 2019. I'll be moderating a session there. Mm-hmm. And you and I are very excited about going out to California again.
The Tennessee ASC Association's Fall Conference and Trade Show is September 26th and 27th at the Hilton Memphis in Memphis, Tennessee.
So the Indiana Federation of ASC's Fall Conference and Trade Show is October 18th at the 502 East Event Center in Carmel, Indiana.
The New York Metro ASC and Healthcare Management Symposium is November 1st, 2019 at the Marriott Marquis in the heart of Times Square.
The New York State Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers Fall Conference is in Tarrytown, New York on November 7th, 2019. And we'll have more information on that soon.
The Washington ASC Association's 2019 Annual Education Conference and Trade Show is November 14th and 15th at the Tulalip Resort and Spa in Tulalip, Washington.
And we can't forget to remind everybody that the CASC examination registration is open until July 31st for the September 1st through the September 30th exam period.
Well, that's it for this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. Join us again, and please spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues, and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including the Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.